Fork. Fork. Fork.
Linoleum, knife, and fork.
A podcast of the food.
Happy International Podcasting Day, everybody.
That's why you are hearing this.
Yes. If you are not a subscriber to our Patreon page at patreon.com/linoleumknife, you would normally not get this food podcast hosted by two film critics. But it's International Podcast Day, so we're letting it free into the wind.
Right.
You're Dave White. I'm Alonzo Duralde.
That sounded weird, letting it free into the wind.
The cyber wind. I don't know.
If, if you're getting this on iTunes, it's because you are trying to listen to Linoleum Knife, probably.
Or maybe you stumbled upon it because you searched the hashtag International Podcast Day thing, or perhaps the name Ruth Reichel brought you here.
She's not here.
No. But our roving correspondent, Margie Rocklin, talked to her recently about a recipe, and that's going to be attached at the end of the program. We don't know if the audio is going to be quite at the same level as the rest of the show, so you might have to lunge for your volume to go up or down.
We tried.
It's a little bit of an experiment here. We've never done this before.
By we, I mean Alonzo tried.
Yeah, Dave just sort of watched. But we're very excited that Ruth Reichel is sort of on this show. So thanks, Margie. We appreciate you making this happen, and we hope this works.
So this week began promisingly enough. Last Saturday was the last time we communicated via podcast with the people who listen to these podcasts.
Oh, that's right, because we gave ourselves Sunday off.
We gave ourselves a day off. And on Saturday, we ate beautiful things. We were over on the far west side in Santa Monica. Ish. At the Royal Theater, we were seeing the new Frederick Wiseman documentary, right. Ex Libris.
Yep.
That is a beautiful way to spend an afternoon, by the way, just in case you want to take an afternoon off and live inside a 3.5-hour Frederick Wiseman documentary about the New York public library system. And you do want to do that.
You do.
But where you really want to do it is at the Royal Theater in Santa Monica, because right next to the Royal Theater in Santa Monica is Nahn Hut.
Yes.
N-A-A-N. We had lunch there with the chicken plate.
Mm-hmm. I had a nice wrap.
God. My experience of going to the theater over there, my experience of going to see a movie in Santa Monica now is completely tied up in the experience of also going to Nahn Hut.
Yes, I can see that. I'm constantly embittered that the churros place right next door to the theater keeps such weird hours.
I know. They don't open until the night, and we're usually over there in the day.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm talking about Nahn Hut.
Okay, fine.
When the movie was over, I was like, what's going to be dinner? And I thought, more Nahn Hut. So I went back there. I got a big, giant, flat oval of sangak.
Yep.
If you have not listened to this show before and heard us
effuse,
send out a love letter each time to the sangak bread every time we talk about it. It's a long, flat, oval Persian bread with sesame seeds.
It's
very nubbly. It's like it's been run over with a bunch of rocks or something.
But it's very, like, you can tear it apart, and it's very spongy and tasty.
It's so warm. They wrap it up in paper for you.
And then you dunk it in things.
Well, here are the things you dunk it in, which is what we got. We got the eggplant and tomato and garlic dipping sauce.
Yes.
It has a name, but I don't know that name. And they don't put any label on the container, just the price.
So what do you just point to it, or do you say, that eggplant thing?
I just grab it out of the fridge.
Oh, right, okay.
Because they have a case that you can just take things out.
But how do you know you're not getting something else that's red?
I know what everything looks like in there.
Okay.
I know what everything is in there, and how delicious it is. Then they have the white stuff.
The yogurty.
Yogurty with little onions in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's got a name, too, I'm sure. Again, no label. You just reach in and grab. Here's the good thing about Non-Hut. Reach into that chilled chilled unit, grab a thing, you can dunk that bread into it. It doesn't matter what it is, and it's going to be good.
I don't know that I would dunk the bread in the dessert that you also got out of there.
That has a label. It's called Cholezard. Cholezard.
Okay.
Two words.
Not to be confused with Charizard from the Pokemon universe.
Right. You don't eat Pokemon.
No.
You train them and catch them.
Correct.
Or catch them and train them.
Something.
Charizard, I don't know if I'm saying it right, but it's a rice pudding.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you what is in this rice pudding. It's so good. Saffron, which turns the whole thing yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Rose water,
yeah.
Cinnamon, slivered almonds, and butter.
Is there something kind of custardy going on in there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's real nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it in that Persia cookbook that you like?
I didn't find it in there, but I wasn't looking for it either.
Okay.
When I borrowed Margie's Persia cookbook, you recall, I made the date... halva.
Yes, which was quite tasty.
Mm-hmm. So, Saturday was fantastic for my stomach. And then Sunday was fantastic for my stomach, too, because we took the day off. We went around and did some things. And we wound up, before coming home, at La Durée.
Yep.
We had dumplings for lunch.
Yes.
At a new place here in town called Northern Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Beverly. It's in our area of the city. Such good dumplings there.
And shockingly, no line.
And some little, well, they're new.
Yeah.
And I know.
Word will get out.
Word will get out, and we won't be able to sit there on a Sunday morning at 11:30 a.m. anymore and just waltz in and say, "Dumplings, please."
Let the record show we did not say "dumplings, please," or snap our fingers.
I did.
No.
I do that everywhere
that
I go.
That is not, no.
I walk in, I snap my fingers.
No.
I say, "Service?"
No. We have new listeners. They don't know you're kidding. You're violating the spirit of International Podcast Day.
There's no such thing as the spirit of International Podcast Day.
There's the one that we give it.
International Podcast Day is barely a thing. The fact that it's here's why I know it's a thing, because you woke up today and it was on the internet and you said, "Oh, guess what today is?"
And I mentioned it earlier this week.
What is this? I don't know what it is. And then you told me when we recorded LKTV, a podcast of the television, that we had actually done something for International Podcast Day last year, and I completely forgot that that happened.
Yeah, I think we did what we did this year, which is take some of our podcasts that usually live behind a paywall and made them available to the general public.
Well,
so they could see all the wonderfulness that they were missing.
It's every year, it's fresh to me. It's new. It's like I never heard of it before. In any case.
What did you buy me for International Podcast Day, Dave?
For International Podcast Day, I did not make you eat any miso soup that I created.
Thank you for that.
But let's go back to talking about La Durée, because it's very important.
Yes.
I don't even know what you got.
I got an eclair, and it was okay.
Well, you got the wrong thing.
I did. And it's the first okay thing I've ever had from La Duree. Every other dessert I've ever had there has been mind-blowing. This was not one of those.
I got the mind-blowing.
Yes.
It was a raspberry. It was puff pastry.
Mm-hmm.
Dotted with little cream puffs full of rose-flavored cream covered in little rose-flavored icing. Then a giant swirly glob of rose-flavored cream on top of that, dotted with raspberries. Maybe it was also raspberry-flavored cream, too. But it was pink.
It was all pink. Everything was pink.
And then on top of it was a rose petal sitting on top like a little hat.
We made a joke the last time we went to La Duree about the idea of gendering food. But between that last visit and this one, they seem to have been going full bore into becoming the American Girl store of desserts.
Listen here, men. You get your ass to La Duree. You walk in there, you say, give me that big, giant, pink, poofy thing with the raspberries and the rose petal on top like a little hat. Put it in your fanciest to-go box for me, a man. And then you go home, and you just go blah, 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 blah. You don't even have to eat it politely in
your
house.
I'm just saying, since the last time we went, which was not that long ago.
Yes.
The a lot of the desserts seem to be aggressively pinker. They have like a Barbie to go box.
Okay.
Like, is this a thing now where little girls in Beverly Hills, rather than having pretend tea parties with little empty pitchers, have real ones at La Duree? Is that the deal?
Lucky little girls.
I'm not against it. Okay. I just find it interesting that an eating establishment would so aggressively be like lady time, especially given that last time we went there and we actually had lunch there, getting service was next to impossible because people were sort of looking through us like we weren't really there.
I don't know anything about that.
All right.
Here's what I know. Men.
Get you a pink dessert.
Get you a pink dessert at La Duree. Oh, God. First of all, it cost $8.
Mm.
I guess that's expensive,
yeah.
But for what I got,
yeah.
It was, listen, $8 of beauty and deliciousness.
And you ate the rose petal, right?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That was the first thing I ate. Here goes your little hat into my mouth.
It wasn't candied or anything. It was just
a straight up rose petal. I just put it in my mouth, started chewing. You know what it tasted like?
Rose?
A rose petal. Like, it didn't taste like anything. If I had eaten it there, the great thing about not eating it there, if I had eaten it there, I would have had a fork and a plate, and I would have been sitting there with all the other
fancy Beverly Hills ladies.
And I would have, you know.
But is it one of those desserts that's almost like a prank in that anywhere you put your fork in, all the cream just comes shooting out in all the other directions?
I have an idea that if you put a fork into this, it just falls down.
Yeah. So you just have to kind of cram it all in your mouth at
once.
It's
such an elaborately constructed little poof of a thing that a fork is immediately going to destroy
its perfect symmetry,
structural integrity, and therefore you will look like a fool.
Right.
Trying to do it, unless you are a fancy lady who knows how to do these sorts of things. I would like to be a fancier lady, but I'm not. And so...
Yeah, you're a brute.
I came home and I put it... I didn't. I opened the box. And then I just started eating it with my hands. And by the end of it, I had the cream, the pink cream, all over my hands, all over my face, on my mustache. I haven't been that happy since the day before when I got to eat all that sangak. If you want to see this pastry and the box it came in, I posted a 6-tweet experience essay about it on Twitter. I'm at D. Leland White, L-E-L-A-N-D, that's my middle name, at twitter.com, D. Leland White.
Twitter.com/D. Leland White.
Whatevs. You'll enjoy it. Just scroll down a little bit. Get past all the stuff where I say that I hate President Trump and wish he would die. Then you'll get to the dessert.
Ah.
Yeah.
I was jealous because my eclair was sort of underwhelming. But yeah, there are certain foods like that where...
Is it okay that I said I wish he would die? I'm not going to do anything about it.
No, you're not actively taking
it. But I do wish he would die.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get a call from the Secret Service about that. It's like sometimes you get those big sort of Dagwood sandwiches or whatever, and you have to kind of cut them in quarters because otherwise, once you pick it up, you can't put it back down again. Like there's a really good greasy burger that just starts seeping into the bun. It's like once you've committed to having it in your hands, you just have to eat the whole thing and then sort of dawdle over your fries. So it doesn't look like you're just jamming through your meal, but there was no option to put it down or else the whole thing was just going to collapse horribly. But then what happened, Dave?
Well, Monday morning I woke up all raring to go. I was like, it's laundry day.
You have tasks.
I'm going to the laundromat. Where's my at a glance? I have many things written down in my to-do list. But I felt weird and out of sorts and had a big cup of tea and that didn't jolt me into anything and looked at my favorite weather websites. that didn't...
You know how to live.
That didn't fill my day with joy. Pornhub seemed listless and unimaginative.
Like they were just phoning it in.
Yeah. And then I went back to bed. And I thought, maybe I just need to sleep some more. So I set my timer on my phone. I'm like, okay, you can sleep for one more hour. It won't be the end of the world.
Listen to your body.
Blah, blah, blah. I woke up an hour later, and I thought, I still don't feel good. I feel weird, like something's wrong. But I got up, I powered through, 3 more hours of the day. I was like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do things. I'm going to answer emails and I'm going to wash some dishes and I'm going to work on Patreon pledges and work on the t-shirt design, see how that's coming along. And then I went back to bed and I slept for about 3 more hours.
Which is very unusual for you.
And then it was 2:30 in the afternoon. And this time when I sat up in the bed, everything hurt. My whole body hurt. And then I ran to the bathroom. And I won't tell you anything about that. But for the next 48 hours... as my fever rose and rose and peaked and then broke and then I sweat myself to death and my body felt like I had been run over by a bus and I ached all over and it hurt to move and I ran back and forth to the bathroom every 30 minutes. You know what I learned?
What's that, Dave?
You know what I deduced as a detective?
What's that?
That I have the stomach flu.
Well, yes. Way to go, House.
Guess what's the opposite of fun? If you get the actual flu, the kind where you're, feverish and achy and chills and
congested
and coughing and stuff, that's actually more fun than the stomach flu. Because the stomach flu rips you up inside and out. Mm. And you're flat on your back until you have to lift your aching, sore, exhausted, miserable body to run to the bathroom again. It's hell. Also, because this is a podcast about eating, nothing interesting gets eaten while you have the stomach flu.
You tried a new kind of applesauce?
That was the highlight of the week. You went to you're a beautiful husband.
Thank you.
You went to the store for me and you got me plain white bread. Mm. And I mean, like, I love that nice bread. We get that La Brea Bakery bread. We get that family bakery bread that makes the miners sourdough. Mm. And that's just, that's good toast bread. You got me Wonder Bread.
Sara Lee White.
Y'all know what Wonder Bread tastes like? Y'all know what that stuff tastes like? First of all, it tastes great. But secondly, it doesn't actually taste like any bread that you know, any good bread that you know. It tastes like
clouds.
Just like a soft nothing. That you need to spread a lot of peanut butter and jams and Nutella on to make taste good.
I knew that in your sickbed state for eating toast, you did not want flavorful toast or integrity toast.
No.
You wanted soft, spongy,
that is, well,
white,
that's exactly what I needed.
Reassuring.
Yep.
You know.
So yeah. You got that, and you got me two kinds of applesauce. One is from extra tart apples.
It's yeah. Gravenstein.
Gravenstein. Yeah. But it was really delicious, better than regular applesauce, I would say. Well. Especially tart applesauce from tart apples with a monster name.
What more do you want?
And then you got me rice and you got bananas, and that was that.
And Margie brought you chicken soup.
The next day, Margie brought over chicken soup from Greenblatt's, and she very thoughtfully included a separate container that had matzo in it and another separate container that had noodles in it.
Yes.
So I went straight for the matzo.
Right.
Because I knew that I would use up all the matzo in the soup and then I would just eat the noodles by themselves later. Because they still had a little bit of chicken broth around them.
Sure, yeah.
So they tasted real good. And then my champagne during that experience, you got me a nice giant jug of Pedialyte.
Woo!
God bless the person who invented Pedialyte. I don't know who that person is, but they deserve to be rich. They deserve to be loved. They deserve to have a comfortable home with central air. They deserve it all. The makers of Pedialyte. If you ever get the stomach flu, the first thing you need is Pedialyte. Here's what you don't need. All that old wives stuff. You don't want ginger ale. You don't want Sprite. You don't want flat Coke. You don't want anything that's just sugar water. Because here's what sugar water is going to do to your guts. Make them real unhappy. While they are already real
in
unhappy.
In an unhappy state.
Yeah. Margie did bring one bottle of Grape Crush soda.
She knows you so well.
Grape soda is my favorite thing. I have only just now begun to drink that grape soda. Mm. Little third of a cups with some ice in a small glass at a time. Because it's been 6 days since this happened.
Right.
And today, 6 days after it started, is the first day that I've left the house. First day I put on shoes. First day I put on pants. First day I felt like a real live human being again.
Yes.
Yesterday, though, I began doing something very important.
Oh.
And this is, y'all all need to know about this because it's going to help you. Let's say you have a colonoscopy because you're old. Let's say you have the stomach flu because you're unlucky. let's say that you have some other gastrointestinal situation that wrecks you inside and leaves you depleted. All the good bacteria in your gut,
your intestinal flora.
Maybe you had some antibiotics.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it too.
All your good intestinal gut bacteria, your flora, you killed it. It's dead. You got to get some new ones. They don't sell them in a box.
Well,
sort of maybe.
If you feel like spending the money at Whole Foods, you can get like, you know, active acidophilus cultures out of the little fridge, but you don't have to.
I don't trust that stuff.
You can eat yogurt.
Do the food. Do it with food.
Yeah.
Food is how you do it in the first place anyway. But you need to start gently eating the things. Yogurt. Kefir. I cooked some rolled oats. Sweetened it with a couple spoons of applesauce. And mixed it all up with that thick Greek yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
Plain. Not flavored. No sugar in it. None of that stuff. You get the plain yogurt. You get used to the taste. But that's been my breakfast for the past 3 days. Because that's helping my insides. More bananas, more apples, you know.
The aforementioned miso soup, right?
Then I made miso soup. Anything fermented, like kimchi, miso, sauerkraut, anything like that, anything pickled like that is going to be good for you. So, I went and I umamied the hell out of myself. And I knew that you were not going to touch it. Because at the very beginning of it, you said, "What stinks in the kitchen?" I said, "Lunch."
I've never liked miso. So you and other people have tried to foist it upon me at various times, and I just knew.
This miso soup is pretty tough. I mean, it's. I don't think it's tough. I think it's delicious. But if you're averse to a lot of, you know, unusual flavors, then maybe you won't like it. But it starts, you make a broth out of bonito flakes, which is dried tuna flakes. So what you've got is this sort of fishy broth. And then you simmer shiitake mushrooms and wakame seaweed in it. I know, it doesn't sound good, but
it does not.
It's so delicious when it's done, and also helping you build your good gut bacteria. And then nice, soft, mild, white, yellow miso. Then you put more, when it's all simmered and done, and you've, first of all, you got to, after you simmer the mushrooms and the seaweed, you got to take them out of the broth, chop all the inedible parts off of them, cut them up into tiny slivers, put them back in, and that's what you, because you can't eat the spines of the seaweed,
mm-hmm.
The tough, you know.
It all sounds inedible.
The
to
stalk,
me.
You can't eat the stalk. It's too hard. You don't want to eat the stems of the mushrooms.
Right.
And so, but you sliver them all back up, put the miso in, and then when you're ready to eat it, you put more greens into it. And it can be kind of anything. I mean, if you have those, you buy that box, those little plastic pouches or boxes of things that they'll call like power greens. You could put those in them. I made you go get me some watercress because I'm really fancy.
It's true.
And I wanted watercress. Mostly the recipe itself called for watercress, but it said you could put anything in it. But I do love the taste of watercress. It's almost like arugula. It's kind of like sharp and peppery.
Whose recipe was this, by the way?
Shh, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Did the soup come out, oh, goopy?
No. Listen. I will not be ashamed. You know what? Screw you. I'm not ashamed. This is from a Gwyneth Paltrow cookbook.
Okay, well, yeah, if you're not ashamed, then say so.
I'm not ashamed. She's a lunatic. But this is good soup.
Yeah, part of Dave's convalescence was I bought him the premier issue of Goop, the print magazine.
It's insane. We talk about it on Linoleum. We talk about it on LKTV. But this is from one of her earlier cookbooks, and it is a good soup recipe. If you like miso soup, and if you like seaweed, and if you like mushrooms, and you like, you know, the flavor base that Bonito Flakes will give your broth. Well,
you should post it on the Patreon page.
I will, and I apologize to the people who were listening last week. Because I got sick, I did not post the recipes from last week's show, the patty melt recipe and the other thing. I will do that this week. Now that I'm whole again.
Yes.
And I've stopped thinking all the darkest thoughts that I could think about my life, my body, and my future.
So you left the house today to go to Target, and we discovered...
something gross.
It's not gross. From last week's conversation, indeed have the butter cookie Oreo. And so we tried them, and I liked them. Because here's the thing. The flavored Oreos are flavored Oreos, whether they're trying to be cinnamon buns or birthday cake or Swedish fish or whatever. But this is actually taking two things that sort of already exist in the cookie world and just kind of making an Oreo out of them. The cookies are graham cracker, and then the filling is cookie butter, which is a thing that exists. So it's the same as if you took two honey-made graham crackers and put Biscoff spread between them, you would like that, right?
Maybe.
Anyway, I think you went into this deciding it was going to be, you were going to hate it. And
I was right.
Yeah, well, you need to open your horizons, Mr. Always Telling Me That I Don't Like Enough Stuff.
I did. I tried it. I ate it. I don't like it. It's too much of everything that I would normally like if they were separate.
In any event,
I'm telling you the truth. I'm not trying to just be contrary. I can do that any old time.
Of the seasonal or whatever, you know, limited time Oreos that I've had, I would say this is one of the best ones.
Would you?
I would.
The other thing I woke up this morning and saw in the world was an old Time Hop post from the day you came home with Paul Sorvino marinara sauce.
Which I do not remember.
I don't remember it either, but I posted a photo of it, and I was confused as to what we did with it, how it tasted, and it must not have been memorable because we probably never had it again.
Yeah, and I don't know. I've never seen it in a store again, so I don't know that it really took off as a second career for Mr. Sorvino.
The other thing, I mean, it might still exist. Mm. Maybe you can get it at Big Lots or something.
The world market.
Yeah. You don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I don't know everything about where things are.
Maybe. We haven't done a search for Paul Sorvino marinara.
Nope. Neither has Mira. The other thing I realized existed today in the world, this is not a reminder, this is brand new to me, something called snickerdoodle hummus.
Yeah, what the heck? Is it chickpea based?
Yeah.
Ooh, so yeah. It's sweet hummus?
Yeah.
That just seems wrong. I mean, look... Obviously, grits can go either way, so I guess, conceivably, a chickpea spread could as well, but...
The company that makes it...
What do you put it on? Fruit? Well,
I'm fixing to tell you. The company that makes it is called Delighted by Hummus.
Okay.
They have a website.
You will not be delighted by hummus.
Here's what they say about their own product.
Okay.
our snickerdoodle hummus will hit you with a whiff of cinnamon spice that's sure to bring you back to the memorably moist, chewy cookies everyone loves. Try it on apple slices, cinnamon pita chips, or simply by the spoonful whenever your craving strikes. Here are the ingredients. Chickpeas, water, coconut milk, turbinado sugar, tahini. You can't make hummus without tahini. Tahini is not sweet.
Tahini's like almond butter, though, right?
Vanilla extract. No, it's sesame paste.
Okay, I knew it was something like that.
Ground cinnamon. They use something called cultured dextrose. I don't know what the hell that is. And salt. Listen, under normal circumstances, I would say, somebody bring this to me. I will try a spoonful of it and tell you what I think. But I'm so repulsed by the idea of its existence.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I want to even bring myself to try it, because in my head, I know what hummus is.
Right.
I love it. And it's not dessert.
No, it's hummus is a carrying device for, you know, garlic and oil. Ugh.
I hate to be so closed-minded, because I was so open-minded about cookie butter Oreos.
Oh, yes.
That turned
totally.
out to be terrible.
Yes, who knew?
But I just kind of have, I kind of already know.
Yeah, that just
what I'm going to think about this when I put it in my gob.
I'm you know, I know we've made fun of the Brits for, you know, the whole peanut butter and jelly, you're mixing your sweet and your savory, but this just seems like, yeah, no, don't do it.
It seems bad and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if any of y'all out there have ever eaten sweet desserty hummus,
please
tell us and convince us that we might be wrong.
Yeah. Or confirm to us that we're right to be horrified.
Because I just feel gnarly about this, the thought of it.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like I'm having the stomach flu again.
Blech.
For regular listeners of this
program,
yes, y'all know that I have painstakingly been reading chapters from the 1960s exploitation novel Amorous Dietitian,
yes.
And then giving you a little book report. And then I fell down on the job, and I quit for a while because I was so bored, because there wasn't a lot of crazy sex in it. And that's what I was hoping.
Was there any dietitianing.
There was no dietitianing going on, and there was also no real awesome exploitation book sex going on. And that's the whole point
of a pulp.
Of the exploitation pulp book from that era. The best thing about this book is the title and the cover. But I finished it.
Oh.
They get married and they have a baby. The end.
Reader, I married him.
Seriously. What a waste of a book. I mean, I'm always going to love it because I'm looking at it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got such a great cover, the promise of heaving everything's.
The author's last name is Gooch.
Mary Chaumette Gooch. What a disappointing authoress you turned out to be.
If that really is your name.
The bar across the bottom that says adult reading.
Hardly.
The title itself.
Yeah.
The title itself is award-winning. In the world where people get awards for this sort of garbage.
I bet you in that publisher's office, they came up with the title and then the cover.
And then they said, get me someone to write
this. And then
this
somebody has to write this book.
In a week.
Yeah, get me Gooch.
Yeah. That guy who writes under the woman's name.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, the end of Amorous Dietitian, it's terrible. Which frees me up to devote more time to the other book that I've been slowly pouring through.
Yes.
On y'all's behalf.
Another classic.
For the sake of y'all.
Of its own genre.
Flo Price's Casseroles, I Have Known.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my favorite recipe from the week. I came up with this recipe today because if I had looked at it 4 days ago, I would have puked. Cottage cheese roast.
Oh, God. Okay. Go on.
Well, she does a little intro for all these recipes. Because
for you gals.
All the recipes come from her other church lady friends.
Yes.
Flo Price was a gospel singer back in the 60s and 70s.
Mrs. Horace P. Johnson writes,
I had no idea who she was. And I grew up in the evangelical church.
Yeah.
The very conservative southern evangelical church.
You know a
church.
Gospel singer.
So I know the gospel singers and their names. I know their faces. I could pull Sandy Patty out of a lineup and have you arrest her for crimes. I don't know what crimes.
Against music.
Sandy Patty has committed. You know what? Sandy Patty can really sing, though.
No, I know. I'm
She was a real good singer. She might still be a really good singer. I don't know.
I told you I went to college with a Gaither, right?
Did you really?
Yeah. She was like a...
Are you still in contact?
I have not talked to her in ages, and I would love to know what she's up to, because we were in a play together, and she was actually dating... She was an undergrad, but she was dating a law student, and he was Jewish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
I don't know. I wonder how that turned out.
Because you know what you're not supposed to do when you're a conservative evangelical.
Yeah, I want to know if he ever had to go meet the family, or if they broke up before that, or if she married him anyway. I don't know. I want to know how this story ends.
Y'all think we're joking. I went to a church when I was a kid where we literally talked one Sunday about whether or not God heard the prayers of Jewish people.
Oh, good Lord.
And the Sunday school teachers concluded that God did not.
Oh, my God.
And we all, as kids, were like, well, okay, I guess that's the way it is.
Anyway, back to casseroles.
Again, I don't know what Sandy Patty's doing anymore, because I got the hell away from all those people as fast as I could when I became a young man.
Yes, you're a recovered evangelical.
A young gay man.
Punk rocker. Punker.
Also a punker.
Yes.
Anyway, so Flo Price has all kinds of other pastors' wives who contributed recipes to this. So every one of these recipes has a little intro. Like Grandpa put his glasses on.
Uh-huh.
In these days when people are very concerned about nutrition, I was delighted to receive these meatless recipes from Mrs. Fogel. They looked so interesting, I've decided to print them both. I don't know what the other one is. But this is cottage cheese roast. 1 large onion, chopped. 1/2 cup of margarine. 3 envelopes of George Washington's seasoning and broth, which apparently, did we look that up?
It's still a thing.
From an earlier recipe, you can still get it.
They still make it.
5 eggs, beaten, 4 cups of cottage cheese, 1 cup of chopped walnuts, and 4 cups of Kellogg's Special K.
Oh, come on!
Sauté onion and margarine, then add George Washington powder, eggs, and all the other ingredients. Mix well. Bake 1 hour, 350 degrees, in a large greased casserole. Serves 10 to 12.
Cottage cheese.
What happens?
Walnuts. Onions, eggs, and Special K?
What does it do on the plate?
Oh.
When you scoop it out after you've baked it for an hour.
I think it screams at you. That just sounds nauseating.
Okay, so here's...
And here's another thing. It would be much better if you made it with ricotta cheese. I'm just going to say.
I've just been reading these to you guys. I haven't tried to...
Oh, yeah, we're not making these.
We're certainly not
eating them.
But I think it's going to come... Once my intestinal flora is back to where it should be...
You are not making cottage cheese roast.
I got to make something.
I would rather you make something that had canned diced celery than
I got to make something out of this casserole book. And it's got to be something daring.
Mm.
It's got to be something like this so that we can say to ourselves, we did it.
Well, I tried it. I vote for something that has like 3 different kinds of Campbell's cream of soups in it.
Yeah, but you could do that today. Like all you have to do now is go to the internet and be like, soups or casseroles with cream of blah blah soup, and Campbell's themselves will have those recipes on their sites in 2017. Ain't nobody recommending you make cottage cheese roast.
All right. If we do that, we have to like document it.
Yeah.
Like there needs to be. We need to Facebook Live. Prep and then come back for the eating.
No doubt.
Go.
If we did it, that's what we would do, and we would have to eat it at least a couple bites. And then make our friends eat it, too.
I'd say Frank DeCaro would have to come over, because this sounds like something that would be in the Dead Celebrity Cookbook.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah. This is right up his alley.
That's a really good idea.
We would have to order the George Washington spices, though.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could make something out of this, and he could make something out of Dead Celebrities.
Mm.
And then we would, yeah.
Have a potluck.
And Dead Celebrities just sits on that bookshelf, that cookbook shelf right there, never used. I read through it and I was like, these are gross. I'm never making
these. I don't think that was published as a hey, you should make these kind of cookbook. It's more of a cultural history kind of cookbook.
No,
like the Gallery of Regrettable Food.
I know. Okay, so that's it. We're gonna read letters now.
Okay. And then at the end, after we're done, stay tuned for Margie's interview with Ruth Reichel about Robert's Cheese Toast, another recipe that I'll link to from the Patreon page.
Brent says, now last week we talked a lot about what do you do with your Oreos?
Yes. Dave was giving me a hard time because I admittedly have a weird way of doing it where I put Oreos in a glass, I fill the glass with milk, I fish them out with a spoon. I understand why people might not dig this, but Dave's specific reason for not being down with this is because he is anti-dunk in general with the Oreo. He thinks that the hydrogenated oil of the cream filling should not go in milk, which I find bananas because it's like, fine, you think my method is too much. I'm not going to die on that hill, but to be anti-dunking for an Oreo, that's just un-American.
Brent says, my grandfather had an interesting way of eating Oreos. He dunked them in buttermilk.
Oof.
He claimed they were too damn sweet to use regular milk.
Okay. I can't deal with buttermilk, but I know there are people who drink it.
Kat says, this is about dunking Oreos. It's also about the lighting in the house.
Yes.
That was a little bit of an aggressive.
Well, it was we were taping at night and it was dark in here.
Wait, there are people who don't read at the dining room table? We have 40-watt energy-saving light bulbs, so quite soft, but more diffuse than what your photo implies to be true of yours. Alonzo is weird for putting all those Oreos in a glass and deluging them with milk. But Dave is simply wrong about not dunking Oreos. They are horrendously dry, as is. Also, sorry to tell you this, but my family doesn't like Biscoff spread.
What?
My godmom specifically doesn't like the texture.
Well, they make a crunchy. Maybe she'd like that.
They do. Jesse says, Dave, aren't you a connoisseur of TV commercials? I am. Oreo's brand has been pro-dunking since at least the early 80s, if my recall of Saturday morning commercials is correct. Like Kat says above, Alonzo's style is not the norm, but he is part of the dunk majority, and pretending your chemicals are gross with milk opinion isn't a fringe position is outright intransigence on your part, though I imagine your longtime listeners and fans would expect nothing less. P.S. Oreos aren't really good enough to be arguing about anyway. Like Kat also said correctly, they are dry AF. Karen says, soda cake.
Ah, yes.
We talked about a New York Times article last week about people who live in the farthest most northernmost region of rural Alaska.
Right.
And for whom cake mixes are
essential.
Salvation, yeah. Soda cake. This is an old diet trick. You just have to use the cake mix without pudding. It's the box of cake mix and one can of diet soda. It mixes up perfectly and it tastes really good. The key is finding the right cake mix to match the right diet soda. Diet soda?
Ew.
No. No. I'm a big fan of white cake with diet orange. I'm sorry, Karen. This must never be spoken of between us. Again, not on the internet and not in person.
Would the sugar of the cake mix overwhelm the bitterness of the artificial sweetener? Is that the idea?
I don't know.
Ugh, yeah, because diet soda, I just can't. I can't.
Karen also writes, pro dunking. Fine.
You're just wrong, Dave.
Brian. Hello, Brian. Alonzo is right. Dave is wrong. Also, tomatoes, especially raw tomatoes, are disgusting. Alonzo is right again. Dave is wrong.
I believe
again.
The first thing in the header is something about Oreos, right?
Oreos, yeah, yes, okay. Yes, yes. Regarding Oreos, Alonzo is right. Dave is wrong. Also, tomatoes, etc. Alonzo is right again. Dave is wrong again. Also, again, and I'm quite late to this, but boiled peanuts are the best thing about the South. You are both wrong.
Ooh, boom.
That was a while ago,
yeah.
When we both decided that boiled peanuts were disgusting.
Yes. Apparently Brian disagrees.
Frank says... Oh, he's got a lot of opinions about things. Hang on. Cookie butter Oreos. These are not half bad. I'm usually wary of the novelty flavors because they inevitably have that weird artificial aftertaste that reminds me of the overpowering, sickly sweet smell you get when you walk past a Yankee Candle company. Yes, I know. Nothing more disgusting than a Yankee Candle.
Ugh. Yeah.
Boiled peanuts. Yankee Candle should have a boiled peanuts scented candle so they could be peak gross.
How do you know they don't?
They might. He says the cookie butter Oreos taste like an off-brand version of Mother's Taffy cookies.
Oh, haven't had those.
Question, is Sprite cake a variation of the 7-Up cake?
I would guess yes.
And he provides a link to the Duncan Hines 7-Up cake recipe. Regarding Sangak, he says it's one of my absolute favorite breads. Well, you're right, Frank. If you happen to be in Encino, check out Sabzi Market, where it is baked fresh hourly. Mm. That's what they do at Non Hut too.
Yeah,
they're constant. That oven is going.
And they're always. You always see the new ones draped over some railing.
They also have an excellent cafe that offers kebab, regional stews, other delights. You were discussing cooking more Persian food. I'd like to suggest giving Ashe Reshte a shot. It's a delicious legume, noodle, and herb stew that would be great when the weather starts to cool down. Thank you for making the summer less of a bummer, he says.
Just call us Judy Moody.
That's right. We're Judy Moody, both of us. It's the not bummer summer. Sophie says the cake made with pop is absolutely a thing and a tasty one at that. When I was young and money was particularly tight, our mom would make chocolate cake with a can of store-brand cola. I remember it as being delicious, but when I made it earlier this year with real Coke, because I've moved up in the world, my girlfriend had to eat it all, since at the first bite I was overwhelmed with feelings and memories.
Oh.
My girlfriend assures me that it was great, and I remember it as being so, but it's one of the things I can't eat anymore because it tastes like poverty.
Mm.
Honey, we should talk about the food that tastes like poverty. Also on that list, fried bologna, instant mashed potatoes, powdered milk, and canned lima beans. Uh-huh. That powdered milk. Listen, powdered milk these days is good to use in baking,
mm-hmm.
for recipe, like cookies and stuff like that. It makes things just...
Richer.
But if you've ever had to actually drink powdered milk, my mom would buy a gallon of whole milk and then a box of powdered milk, and then you would just stretch it. Stretch it that way.
Right.
Not good. It was not good. Yeah. She says, I don't mind never eating most of these again, but the cake thing was a bummer.
What's the line in House of Yes? Tori Spelling says, pancakes. We ate a lot of pancakes.
Yeah. Mr. M.A. Ross says, regarding poor people food, moms used to make chili spaghetti. Well, chili spaghetti is delicious.
Well, as I say, go to Cincinnati and get it at Skyline. They live for that stuff.
She would boil the noodles, drain them, and add a can of chili. If that wasn't enough starch, she'd just make a tub of tube of Pillsbury biscuits to go with it.
So that would be the bean-in chili, then.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, that, oh, I want that now. okay, it's time for the Ruth Reichel bit.
All now, right.
I want to tell y'all who you're listening to. Ruth Reichel is
a legendary food
legendary food writer. She's had lots of cookbooks. She was...
New York Times?
A co-producer of the... she was the last editor-in-chief of the now-gone Gourmet magazine. Last week, when we were talking about whichever magazine...
Thought it was Bon Appetit.
We thought it was wrong. Bon Appetit, then it died. It was Gourmet that died. I've actually got an issue. I've got the latest issue of Bon Appetit sitting right here, and I was too dumb to even look over it.
And we have a funny Bon Appetit story that we'll share next episode that someone shared with us.
But anyway, she was the host of PBS's Gourmet's Adventures with Ruth.
Yep.
So... she's a thing.
Author of several bestsellers.
If you don't know who she is, it's you should get to know her. She's the real deal. She's not nobody.
Yeah.
So Margie of Margie's Correction Corner was at an event with her and cornered her.
And got her on tape.
And when I say cornered her, I mean they know each other.
Yeah.
They're not. It's not like they're strangers. Because Margie runs in that crew.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to play it for you. It's all about a recipe that Ruth Reichel came up with based on other people's work for a cheese toast that I've had. And it's... really, really incredible. Now, we don't know how the volume's going to be.
Right.
It came in at a very low volume, and then we sent it through Audacity.
Yes.
And now it's a higher volume. We don't know if it's going to be the volume that we are at now, or higher than us, or lower than us. So be ready.
Yes.
Put your hands on your volume control to fix it the way you need it.
So we'll wrap up from our end here. Thank you to everybody who, if this is your first Linoleum Knife and Fork, we hope you enjoyed it, and we hope that maybe you will feel like becoming a member of our club over at patreon.com/linoleumknife. You can get this show, you can get LKTV, Linoleum Nights, and lots of extra goodies and shirts and content and all kinds of things. Go check that out. Have a great International Podcast Day, and until next time, eat them up, yum.
And now, go listen to this.
So what I wanted to do was ask you about how you developed Robert's Cheese Toast.
All right, I can't take credit for it. I wish I could because it's so brilliant. But this is the odd thing about it. This is a gourmet recipe, and it comes from our fanciest cook, a guy who was in France as a painter working with Sim Quebec, and everything he does is perfect. And somehow this is a family recipe from Iowa of his, and it's all supermarket ingredients. And the first time I read the recipe, I was like, really, we're going to put this in the magazine? It's such a classic America. I mean, first of all, you have to start with very thin white bread. White bread, anathema to gourmet readers everywhere. Then you make a mixture on top of, you grind up bacon, sharp supermarket cheddar cheese, usually white because it looks better if it's white. The yellow kind gives it kind of gaudy look. Half of an onion, and then you throw in some horseradish. And you put this all in the blender and you spread it on top of the slices of white bread, and then you put it in the freezer. And then, of course, you cut off the crust. Once it's frozen, it's very easy to cut off the crust. And you cut it into squares, and you put it in the oven, you broil it. And what comes out is something that is so delicious that the most sophisticated eaters pounce on it and gobble it all up. I think the first time I made it myself, you know, this is like a beloved gourmet recipe that I was way too fancy to ever serve to my guests. But I was in a rented house in LA with none of my usual, you know, not lots of great olive oils or vinegars or all the things I count on to make my lovely little food. And I was having a group of people over, and I thought, well, I'll make this. This is, I can go to the supermarket, I can get everything. I've got a primitive stove, but it'll work. And so I serve it to all of my fancy chefy friends, and they all love it and eat it all up. But the person who eats the most of it is my friend Robert, who every time he came over afterwards requested, could you make that great cheese toast again? So it's now called Robert's Cheese Toast.
Okay, so the thing that Robert is my husband. The thing that I thought was really funny is that I have made Robert's Cheese Toast at Dave and Alonzo's house, and their oven runs really hot. And so I made it, and I burned the bottom, and then I scraped a little of the black stuff off, and I cut it up and served it, and it went the same way. Like, you can't ruin it.
You can't. And okay, so now here's the thing, that as I was writing it up to put on my blog, I suddenly realized this is the poor man's version of the famous Alsatian tarte flambée, which was the signature dish at Lutèce in New York. So, I mean, it's basically the same thing, except that it's on white bread instead of, you know, some kind of crust that you labor over for days. But it's, you know, you can't beat bacon and cheese. I mean, when it comes down to it, you know, throw in a little bit of onion and some horseradish, and how could it not be good?